This is KGNU Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins.
Welcome, KGN listeners, to the Labor Exchange. I'm your host this week. My name is Robert Lindgren, political and organizing director with the Colorado AFL-CIO and a member of the Denver Newspaper Guild, Local 37074. With me today is Western States Director of the Blue-Green Alliance, Chris Markison. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks for having me, Robert.
Thank you for joining us. To start, can you provide our listeners with some background on the Blue-Green Alliance, its history and purpose?
Yeah, the Blue-Green Alliance is an organization that brings together labor unions and environmental organizations to think through policies for states and at the federal government to both create really good jobs, family-sustaining jobs for workers, and to take part in the climate crisis, actually improving the environment giving good jobs to workers is what we do. Blue-Green Alliance has been around for almost 20 years now. It was started by United Steelworkers and the Sierra Club. They got together and had a conversation looking at how can we actually create good conversations amongst ourselves and think through hard policies at the federal level to do these kinds of things. And I wasn't there at the time, but I imagine it was something like a conversation similar to, why are we always fighting? Can't we get along? We want the same things. We really want great work, great jobs for workers and for them to do things in the new energy economy. So that's our purpose. We work both at the federal level, but also in states. And we were invited by Colorado AFL-CIO and our partners and the environmental organizations in our state to come to Colorado in 2019.
Great. Yeah. And in 2019, the Blue-Green Alliance, the Colorado AFL-CIO, and a broad coalition of supporters pushed to create the first ever statewide Office of Just Transition. Can you please start by describing the concept of just transition for our listeners?
Sure. So this is a concept that in Colorado is focused on coal transition, but just transition has been a priority topic of labor across many industries since the 1970s. And the concept basically focuses on two groups of folks. One is workers, thinking through change and recognizing that industry changes require support for workers. And especially in Colorado, we're thinking about when coal industry declines, the kinds of things that workers are going to need. So that support could include things like wage support or healthcare or protecting people's retirement. But also really thinking about giving workers multiple options to move into new lines of work, to start a business potentially, to retire with dignity, or to potentially relocate when a coal company closes. We also see that the theory of just transition really thinks about retraining for high road jobs so that we can make use of workers' unique skills and put them to work doing something different and really think through that with policy. The concept also looks at communities and recognizes that fundamentally a lot of communities are really tightly tied to a single industry. And many communities in Colorado, coal is the only revenue source for their community. And so in order for the community to evolve, there needs to be some radical change, and the radical change of economic diversification and bringing new industry to the community is a big part to that. So it's reliant upon, just transition is reliant upon every resident in those communities shaping their community's future, thinking about things to improve the quality of life through investments in infrastructure or in businesses, through in education or other community priorities, thinking about and supporting essential services like healthcare or local government, schools that remain whole and actually improve through transition, to eliminate pollution and reclaim coal mines is a thing that we're looking at here in Colorado as well, both creating new jobs in cleaning things up, but also to allow new uses of land. Just transition thinks about reclaimed spaces like mines where They can become homes to agriculture or wildlife or outdoor recreation spaces or even renewable energy generation. We also think Just Transition looks at making sure that communities can become economically diverse, sustainable, resilient places where all people are better off than they were before the transition.
Yeah, and you touched on this a little bit, but can you talk a little bit about the importance of community collaboration and local leadership when working with communities facing things like power plant closures or similar challenges?
Yeah, so we really look at how a community can evolve. How does a community become, have a different industry base? How can it have economically diverse economy? It's harder than it sounds, especially when you have been solely dependent on a single industry or solely, you know, a company town. In large cities, they do this. They have full-time staff that focus on economic development, and they either bring new businesses to the community or they help support businesses that are already there, expand and grow and create new jobs. And they really think about wage quality and a number of different things that the community can prioritize. In rural places, oftentimes, there's just no one able to do that work. First, there's just not enough people to actually focus on it, and there's definitely not enough money to do it either, and help guide those things. But fundamentally, the really important thing for a community to do economic diversification is that they need to basically create a plan. And the plan needs to be guided and driven by people in their own community, by the community itself. The best experts on what a community's intrinsic resources are, whether they're people resources or whether they're natural resources, the people that live there are the experts. Pulling them together, facilitating good stakeholder engagement, and driving a process to build the plan to really rethink what our community is going to become is really vital. So we think that there are ways that the state of Colorado, maybe the federal government, can assist and help communities have both full-time folks that are facilitating their own interactions locally, but also bring people together, facilitate good discussions across the community so that the best ideas of what the future can hold for the community are formed and then actually led locally. Time and time again, economic development initiatives that are done by someone swooping into a community have been failures. And so we recognize that someone in Denver can't just simply go to Craig, Colorado and say, hey, here's the solution. It doesn't work like that. Craig themselves, who are going to go through a transition, and they recognize and have been, you know, going through a process to plan their transition from coal, leading that and having the resources to do it is the only way to get it done.
Office of Just Transition playing in supporting this process.
Yeah, so House Bill 1913-14 in Colorado created the Office of Just Transition, and it was given a charge by the legislature to do a few things. And one was to actually bring multiple the agencies of Colorado government together and think through what existing resources that this does the state have to help coal communities do what they need to do. And those resources could be technical assistance, they could be financial, they could be any number of different things like workforce development or other kinds of things that a community might call upon the state to have. The challenge, however, as we saw it, was rural communities, especially coal communities, who are under-resourced and don't have staff who really know the ins and outs of state government, don't know where to go. And it's really complicated to try and call the Department of Local Affairs, to call the Department of Revenue. It understand sort of the nuances of state government is a challenge. So the Office of Just Transition is a central point that convenes all of the agencies and targets and strategically thinks through ways that the state can assist communities. The other part to it is that the office will think through needs that the communities don't have or the state doesn't have, and go and find them and pull them together and act like a clearinghouse of sorts for other things. Coordinate a variety of different assistance for communities from the state. And then the office really is a place for us to think through statewide assistance to communities. And, you know, the Just Transition initiatives have happened in a variety of ways across the country, but they're almost always one community at a time. And it's really a challenge when you have, you know, multiple communities that are transitioning from one thing to another, where some do are able to do a really good job because they can get access to resources and others don't, and they just can't. And so we felt like it was an equitable and fair way for Colorado to support all of our coal communities as they transition and really think through how the statewide economy can transition as coal declines, and think through that with a strategy so that communities can actually work together and there can be in reinvestment opportunities and so forth really catapult Colorado's coal communities forward.
Great. Thanks for that, Chris. And for those just joining us, we're talking with Chris Markison with the Blue-Green Alliance. Switching gears, Nick Bolin reported in the High Country News about the Interior Department's new estimate that there are 130,000 orphaned oil and gas wells in the U.S. The Infrastructure and Investment and Jobs Act that President Biden signed in November includes $4.7 billion to plug and reclaim abandoned and orphaned wells, but estimates range the full cost will be somewhere from $2.6 billion to nearly $19 billion to deal with these abandoned wells. My question is, how did we get to this point and how do we fix it? And also, what role could remediation of these abandoned sites play in providing opportunities for workers in Colorado?
That's a great question, Robert. So we all know and have lived through multiple booms and busts in Colorado, where oil production is up and then it's down. And there are lots of factors for how that happens. And many times during those busts, Colorado's has been left with orphaned wells where a company leaves for whatever reason, whether it's bankruptcy or they simply walk away. And leave a well that just is uncapped sitting there. And this has left us with some pretty big problems where there's nobody left, you know, able to reclaim and remediate that well. And these wells are also often places where big amounts of methane is spewing into the atmosphere from them because they're uncapped. And of course, we know from science that the climate is really impacted by methane, considerably more so and immediately from methane, even more than carbon dioxide. So this is a really challenging moment here. We see that cleanup opportunity, cleaning up wells can really provide economic benefit to regions while improving our natural lands and reducing emissions. And we recognize that as the country continues to shift toward cleaner energy production and electric vehicles become more popular, that consumption of oil and gas is likely to go down. So we know that the need to cap more wells and remediate wells is going to increase. We see cleanup of oil and gas production sites as an opportunity for Colorado workers to pick up new work, especially in areas where changes are happening, where you've got transitions. This work, however, hasn't historically paid very well. We think that Congress can and should and is doing through the Infrastructure Jobs Act to make sure that workers are paid a prevailing wage to do that work. That's an important part to this, but also making sure that there's enough money to actually reclaim all of the wells that are currently orphaned. That's sort of the circumstance of how we are here today. We also think that it's important for the federal government to think about preventing this from happening in the future. We recognize that the bonding rates that were are very old. They've not, for the federal government lands, have not been modified for more than 50 years. We think the federal government can actually improve their bonding requirements for future wells so that when you are proposing to develop a new well, if you have an adequate bond set aside that allows you to tap it when it's time to reclaim the well, that is a way to make sure that you're doing the right thing.
And you had mentioned the concept of a prevailing wage. Can you just define that for our listeners
who may not be familiar? Prevailing wage is a wage rate that is at a livable wage for the community in which you live. It's a little bit different across every community, but it's a livable wage. It's a family sustaining wage. Basically, that the prevailing wage rates are set by a federal formula that go into that. And most federal funds, when you have money coming from the government, really do pay a prevailing wage. We in labor have tried to make sure that that is a thing, whether that's things like this well reclamation or whether it's a construction project for things like that labor works on, right? That prevailing wage is a way to ensure that our workers are paid a livable wage that they can live off of and support a retirement and so forth.
All right, let's talk about another piece of legislation the Blue-Green Alliance backed in Colorado, Senate Bill 246 around beneficial electrification. Can you explain what this law does, why it was necessary in Colorado, and why it had such strong support from labor groups and workers?
Yeah, and this is very unique, and I'm glad you mentioned this, Robert. This bill has not been done in other places with support of labor because it's a challenge. The concept is that we know that buildings are one of the largest sources of greenhouse gas emissions through burning of fossil fuels for heating and cooling and so forth. However, changing that, modifying the way that the buildings work is really expensive and a challenge. And also it's a challenge for us, for our workers, for our members that work in the oil and gas industry, knowing that if we are deliberately reducing consumption of natural gas in buildings, that potentially puts somebody out of work upstream. And that's a big challenge for us. So the concept of converting natural gas water heaters and stoves and furnaces to electric alternatives is popular with our environmental partners because they see the emissions reductions, but is not popular with labor. It's a challenge for us. What we did in Colorado is we convened our Blue-Green Alliance table of labor and environmental organization leaders. And it took a two-year process for us to think through ways to actually reduce emissions from buildings and support workers in the process. And the concept that we created in Colorado is an incentive-based approach. So the Public Utilities Commission, because of the legislation, is ordered to create a beneficial electrification program. And they basically will set dollars aside that allow homeowners or business owners or commercial building owners to electrify, to actually switch their appliances on their own accord when it's time for them to do it and get some benefits, some actual tax credits or some cash to actually offset that cost. What was unique in Colorado is we saw that our labor members who are working on commercial and industrial buildings that are really complicated, that require a really high degree of skill to actually achieve the emissions reductions and have the building perform properly, requires a really great skill, a level of skill in making sure that renovation, that adaptation is actually done the correct way. So we added a labor standard into the legislation that requires apprenticeship access for highly educated, highly skilled workers to do the work in order for the building owner to qualify for the incentive from the utility. We think that that's really a vital thing. We're protecting the interests of ratepayers, utility ratepayers, but we're also making sure that the work gets done right the first time. And we're guaranteeing it because we're tapping the skills and the abilities of union labor who has gone through an apprenticeship program. They're the highest skilled workers in the construction trades that are out there, they should be properly assigned to do the most complicated work in building electrification. So that's basically what the bill does.
Oh, great. That's very interesting. And thank you for explaining that. We at the Colorado AFL-CIO have been disappointed to see efforts to pass the Build Back Better Act stall out. From an environmental and labor perspective, why is this bill important? And what are we losing by not passing it right now?
We've been equally frustrated, Robert, with the slowness to get Build Back Better passed. What was proposed in the bill was really revolutionary. It was thinking about transition, that the community, that the country is going through an energy transition, and that we need to support that transition, but also really think about the environment in doing so, and workers, and making sure that as folks transition, as the economy transitions, and as energy choices transition, that workers are not left behind, families are not left behind in that process. Build Back Better really contemplated a wide swath, and does contemplate a wide swath of federal investments, both in response to the pandemic, but also to make sure that we're really shifting in an intelligent way. A number of things that Blue Green Alliance looks at in Build Back Better, and we're really actively supporting. One example that I think folks will recognize is that electric vehicles are an important part to reducing emissions in the transportation sector. And we recognize that a lot of electric vehicles can and should be made by the United Auto Workers here in the United States, and that the primary beneficiaries of a shift should be the folks that are actually building cars right now. They should be able to be encouraged to build electric vehicles. Build Back Better invests money to allow companies to retool and be able to actually meet the new demand and need. And then it adds additional incentive to reduce the cost of those vehicles for you and I, folks that are going to buy an electric vehicle at some point in the future. And the credit that you would get, we would actually go to the dealership and you would immediately see a reduction in cost for you if you're purchasing an American-made, union-made vehicle. That's like one of the things that we think is really fantastic. The other part to the infrastructure package is recognizing that as our energy choices are shifting and changing, it's important that the country invest in things that are going to allow that to happen. Things like expansion of the electric grid in a way that allows renewables to be on the grid, but also serve communities across the country with renewables and battery and other sort of technology in a way that makes a lot of sense. Also thinking about how energy storage and energy production can be done with new technology, and thinking about things like the role of hydrogen or the role of new storage technologies and things that create jobs for workers to move into, especially if they're leaving a coal-fired power plant into a clean power generation arena. Those investments are big and important and timely and necessary. And it's a shame to see it being slowed down in Congress. We're doing everything we can, both here in Colorado and talking to our Colorado delegation for Congress, but also nationally to try and get things moving and moving forward in the Build Back Better plan. We also played a really great role in and very proud of our work, and as well as the work of our senators here in Colorado and our representatives in passing the bipartisan infrastructure package. Great things in there, good investments that are going to come to Colorado and create great jobs for workers and improve our environment.
Thank you so much for that, Chris. Finally, I'd like to give you an opportunity to discuss any future projects of the Blue Green Alliance or any closing thoughts today.
Yeah, so one of the things that's on our mind, Robert, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here, is thinking about other tools that Colorado has to help make sure that we improve the lives of workers And that we move forward as a state, making sure that our economy is able to be resilient and adapt to changes. And one of the things that we're thinking about and looking at is economic development, ways that economic development can actually be a little bit better. Things like improving the way that we think about when we build things using state funds from economic development resources to make sure that they're green, that they're clean, that they're not causing excess pollution by choosing materials that are produced overseas that are dirty or by choosing products that are harmful to the environment and making sure that if they are manufactured by companies here in the US that are high road companies that have great labor standards for workers, that they're not a bad organization. That's a simple thing that the state of Colorado can actually do to both ensure great work for Coloradoans and for workers across the country, but also to improve our environmental footprint, reduce emissions through the construction process of buildings. We think that the economic development arena is an opportunity for some policy to help Colorado improve that. That's one thing. We have a lot of things going on, and a lot of it is almost all of our work is driven by our table of environmental and labor members saying these are our priorities. This is how we need to get to our climate reduction goals, our gas reduction goals, and then also really build and support work for workers.
Great. We've been talking with Chris Markison with the Blue-Green Alliance. Thank you, Chris, for being on the Labor Exchange at KGNU.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me, brother.
Great. This has been the Labor Exchange. I am Robert Lindgren for KGNU Boulder, KGNU Denver, and KGNU.org. Yep.